And so with that being said, just a little bit of a recap. last week we were talking about we are citizens of heaven. Okay, and that was verses 11 through 12. I'm sorry, not last week, 2 weeks ago. 11 through 12 said, "Beloved, I urge you as aliens and strangers to abstain from fleshly lusts, which wage war against your soul. Keep your behavior excellent," and all that good stuff. And so that was how we live as citizens of heaven, living on earth in the present time. And so as I was looking at our passage for today, as well as, you know, the one before it, I was looking for kind of a main theme or a phrase or a verse, and the best that I found was found in is found in verses 9 through 10. So if you have your Bibles, you can look up a little bit where Peter says, "But you are now presently a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for God's own possession." Okay, and so that's kind of the thesis, his main point for the for these lessons that he talks about from verses 11 through 15. Okay, and so two lessons that we want to see from this passage today. First lesson being submit, and the second one being God's will. Okay, and you can follow in your bulletins. I see SJ is ready and eager to get going. So here we go. Submit. Submit, okay? Simply from the first word in verse 13, Peter says, "Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human institution." And we'll stop there. Submit. It's the idea that as Christians, we still need to pay our taxes, okay? Not kill people, okay? Not steal things, not cheat on our taxes, and all that stuff, okay? And you might, I mean, for, you know, a young crowd like this, a lot of you guys are going to be like, okay, that's not a big deal. But the thing is, in the 2,000-plus year history of the church, there have been people in the past, and probably a bunch of people now, that believe that because I'm a Christian, and, you know, mainly like a little bit like what we talked about last week, about we are citizens of heaven and God is our king, they literally believe that they really don't need to submit to human government, okay? Or they will think, for example, like paying taxes and stuff is a bad idea, okay? And every once in a while, if you watch the news enough, you'll see these, they'll call them radical groups, you know, they'll like live out in the wilderness or whatever. Not to say that they're all Christians, but in the 2,000 year history of the church, there have been many people who thought that because we are God's people and God is our king, and because government is not Christian, therefore, I don't really need to kind of worry about this thing here. I just worry about God as my king, okay? And so kind of in that, in the face of that, Peter comes out and says, no. You are citizens of heaven. That's very true, okay? We are God's people. He is our king. However, right, we are still, at the present time here, living in this world. And that means that here now we submit to human government, secular government. And when I say secular, I don't mean evil necessarily. When I say secular, I mean not Christian. Okay? And so that means, okay, that we have to listen to what the government says, even when we don't like it. Okay? For you younger guys, you're going to be like, whatever. Like, you know, how much trouble can you get into? You know, like your worst for you younger guys, your government is like your parents and your teachers. Okay, your teachers tell you to do your homework, you got to do your homework. If you don't, you get a big, fat, ugly letter on your papers or your report cards or whatever. Okay? But for us older guys, a little bit more, you know, especially us, you know, working and stuff, you know, and we get to vote, right? As Christians, I think we should vote. I think it's a terrible idea that I've actually heard, like, young people, young Christians say, you know, I'm a Christian, so I'm not going to vote. It's like, why? And they're like, because God is my king, yeah! It's like, all right, that's cool. But you still need to submit and listen to government. And the reason is because this. There's a thing in the Bible called common grace. There's two types of grace, two categories of grace. One is salvation grace, and that is speaking mainly about things like salvation and Christ and how, you know, he dies in our place. But there's also a thing called common grace, which talks about how God loves and takes care of everyone, even unbelievers. Okay? And there are different ways that God shows common grace. For example, at the end of Noah in Genesis, that's one picture of common grace where God says to Noah, not in the movie, but in the Bible, right? God says to Noah, I will not destroy humanity for their sins with water. Okay? We don't have to do anything. Unbelievers don't have to do anything special to receive that. They just get it. Okay? There's another part in the Bible where God says, you know, I bring rain and the seasons, right? I bring the rain and I make the sun rise on the righteous and the unrighteous. Okay? It's called common grace. Right? Another example of that is government. It's called common grace. God gave us government. Okay? And we see that starting in Genesis chapter 4, I believe. Right? And this is not, I'm not trying to stay up here saying that government is good, like spiritually good, okay? But government is a common grace gift that God gives to us to establish and uphold a basic structure of law so that there is no anarchy. So, like, Elliot can't just... If Elliot, like, punches Joseph and takes his lunch money, like, if there's no government, then he's... whatever, right? Survival of the strongest. Whatever, man, right? But government is there so that if Elliot does that, then Elliot's getting locked up. Or at the very least, the government sends some to enact justice, right? Okay, that's my, like, twisted view of government. Okay, and this is an important thing, especially for younger guys growing up, in terms of doing your duty, civic duty, especially in the American culture. When you turn 18, vote. I think it's always interesting that I meet young Christians, especially college age Christians, who say they love Jesus and they never vote, and they always complain about government and all the government mistakes and stuff. Right? Guys, I'm going to tell you, government is going to make a lot of mistakes. You know why? Because it's filled with sinners. And I'm including the Christians, okay? It's going to mess up. It's not perfect. Right? The only perfect form of government, I actually read this in a book, these government professors, I guess, they were at a conference or whatever, and they're talking about what is the best form of government? Best form of government. And as good Americans, we go, democracy! No. Okay? They didn't say that. They said the best form of government would be monarchy, a king. But then they said, but that's not possible because in order for monarchy to be perfect, you need a perfect king. Okay? The problem that I'm trying to present here is that As Christians, we are in submission to our King. Right? But there's a disconnect because when we think, because I'm submitted to Jesus, I don't have to submit to Obama. No, no, no. Jesus says, hey, guess what? Obama, as the kind of guy he is, his good and his strengths and his weaknesses, doesn't matter because I still put him there. And so guess what that means? That means if we are, if we really believe that God is our King, then that means we have to listen to what the government says and we have to obey. That means, Northern Virginia people, hold your breath for a second. That means not speeding. That means, Chase's not here. That means when there's a stop sign, you have to stop. Okay. That means even if crazy woman hits us on the road and they use the legal system to make us crazy, we still have to let the legal system do its job. Okay. That means if there's police following you, there's probably a good reason for them to do so, okay? And if a cop shows up at your door and knocks on your door and say, hey, son, do you have crack? You might want to ask yourself why. You know what I mean? I'm not saying that son has a crack or anything like that. He's just in my line of sight, okay? And so we need to submit to government because it is a form of common grace that God gives to everyone. And that is a very gracious side of God, if you think about it. Because he doesn't owe it to us. He really doesn't. If anything, common grace shows us God, how much God actually really likes sinners. And I think sometimes as Christians, we forget that. And for other times, we think about it and we don't like the idea that God likes sinners. But the problem is when we start thinking like that, then we start automatically assuming that we're not sinners anymore. No, 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 no. If anything, we look at Obama or government and how Congress doesn't do anything or president does this or that, and you're like, oh man, that's so weird, that's so stupid, or whatever. No, before you start thinking that, you should be like, man, you know, God didn't really have to give us this, but he did. He didn't have to give us the law. Right, the laws of the United States. But he did. For our protection. Right? And God really likes sinners. That's a mind-boggling idea. And there's a subset of point one that I kind of want to go into. I don't want to get into too much because it can get out of hand. The question would be, okay, so how do I submit to a government, especially when it's so violently or explicitly non-Christian? Okay, so when Peter says submit to the king, he's saying that with the implication that you submit to the government just so long as you don't violate your relationship with God. Right? And we see the example of that in Daniel. Okay? Daniel is a Christian guy, a guy who trusts in God. He works in a secular government. He works for a non-God-believing king. Right? But he maintains his relationship with God still. You know? And even when the king makes it hard for him to live out his Christian life, particularly his prayer life, Daniel's one act of disobedience to his government was his prayer, was when the government said, no, you cannot do this. And I don't care if it messes up your Christian life. And Daniel said, no, I will submit to the king on everything except my prayer life. I'm not giving that up because my prayer life, that's in submission to God, the king. Okay. And so kind of in that kind of vein, the question is, okay, so how do we submit to a government, especially in situations where the government is so blatantly evil? Right? Throughout history, we think about the government of Germany in the 1920s and 1930s, especially after World War I, when Adolf Hitler is made chancellor in 1933. And then he becomes the Führer, and then he starts passing all these anti-Jewish laws, starting with the Nuremberg laws. I don't know. It seems very evil. How do you submit to that? You know, and the funny thing is, in Germany at that time, there was a lot of Christians, met a lot of churches and a lot of pastors in Germany at the time. A lot of churches, sad to say, said, we don't like Jews either. Some Christians actually said, that's a pretty stupid, or I didn't say stupid, that's a pretty evil idea, and this is not good. One of them is a young German pastor named Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Okay, if you have a chance, I would highly recommend a book about him and his life that I'm reading right now. It's taking me a long time. It's a really fat book, but it's really, really interesting. And what you see in Bonhoeffer is Hitler comes to power, and Bonhoeffer doesn't just shut down and say, okay, this guy's crazy, this guy's bad, I'm not going to listen to him. He doesn't do that. He actually engages. And he's like, he's still paying his taxes. He still does what the cops tell him. He still does what the government tells him. But at the same time, he kind of goes against the parts of the government where it's kind of stepping out of its bounds and stepping into his spiritual life. And he's like, no, this is not good. I'm not compromising that. Okay. And Daniel does that too, you know. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, for his efforts to stand against Hitler with just the small number of churches and pastors, ultimately ended up paying the price with his life and died in a concentration camp, sadly, just a few weeks before the Allied armies came and liberated it. And even Peter, the author of this letter, it's easy for us. I know I made a mistake and I said, huh, you know what, Peter? You're not under Obamacare. You don't know what it's like, man. You know? You don't know what it's like to have to pay taxes for this or do that or take care of this or how you pay taxes to the federal government and you pay taxes to the state of Virginia and you also pay tax, I do, have to pay a special tax to the county of Loudoun. It's like, what the heck? Man, they're killing me. Right? Peter, you don't know. You don't understand. You don't understand my pain. But guess what? Peter had to, when he was writing this letter, he was under a crazy emperor named Nero. A lot of people from your Western Civ class will remember Nero. Right? Nero was a little bit crazy. There are reports that he actually started a fire in Rome. And when the government was, you know, doing their investigation, it was the evidence was starting to lead back to him. And so in an effort to save his own skin, what he did was he started a rumor and said it was a bunch of Christians. I mean, people were like, yeah, that makes sense. They don't like our gods and they don't like the emperor because we don't bow to Caesar, we bow to Christ, right? And so Nero used that to blame the Christians and killed a whole bunch of them, including Peter. Peter and Paul were executed under the reign of Nero. Okay, so when Peter writes this and tells us to submit to government, it's not like Peter's coming from like a whole other, like a really good, happy, bubbly place. He's not. And then sometimes I wonder, man, what was he thinking about when he's writing this? Submit to the king. Right? And I can't help but wonder that he wrote that line and he stopped for a moment and thought about, man, that guy's crazy. The guy in Rome is nuts. And sometimes, you know, as you're growing up, you'll have that thought, right? You'll be like, man, the guy in D.C., the guy in the White House is nuts. He's crazy. Doesn't matter. Still submit. Okay? So that was my little detour about submitting to government, even in the light of difficult situations. All that just to say this, you submit to the government just as long as, and you draw the line where it comes when the government starts stepping out of its bounds and start stepping into spiritual things. Because God gives us government to deal with physical realm, but in terms of the spiritual realm, we are still completely surrendered to God. And so as radical and even scandalous as it may seem, as Christians, we submit to two governments. We submit to our American government, and we also submit to the government of God. And the part that's very unpopular is the idea that as we are submitted to God, we our submission to God supersedes our submission to the American government. Okay? With that being said, we could go on for a long time, longer time than that, but we won't. Second lesson we see is God's will. Okay, Peter says that our obedience to the government and law can be an effective tool in living out a Christian testimony. Okay? Now, what does that mean? It means this. Okay, let me ask you this. Because it's basically like Peter saying, hey, if you go the speed limit, then that will help your Christian testimony. And you go, what? I don't understand. Okay? Let me put it to you a negative way. Okay, and this is very embarrassing for the church, I think. Especially for you guys who are drivers, as you're driving around Nova, try to guess how many of the people that are on the road with you are actually Christians. If you go by just the way they drive, you'll probably be like, there's like five. Most of them are not Christian. They're God-hating heathens. I know, I think that a lot, right? And sometimes I wonder, the way I drive, people think that about me. Right? And that's kind of what Peter's going for. Hey, guys, if you're going to tell people that you love Jesus, right, even your driving should reflect that. Not to say that you got to drive like a grandma, okay? That's against the law, too. I know. I looked it up, okay? You're not supposed to go, like, 15 miles under the speed limit. That's bad, okay? And you're not allowed to get sleepy on the wheel, either. If you get sleepy, pull over, take a nap, okay? But at the same time, within the boundaries of the law, we are nonetheless to obey the law of the government in such a way that when the world sees us, it helps our Christian testimony. I think a lot of times, I'm using the example of driving, I think a lot of times the way we drive, it's kind of hard for people to be like, you know? This is why I also, to this day, violently oppose the idea that Peggy has to put a Jesus sticker on my car. Because I don't want them to know I'm a Christian. Because I want to speed and do all that kind of stuff. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm going to tell you guys straight up. Okay, this is straight up testimony time. I'm about to cry. Ready? There's a fundamental difference in the way I drive my car versus when I drive the church van. Okay, not just because the church van is like really, really big and slow. Okay, but the main reason is because when you drive the church van, guess what it says? It says Risen Sun Presbyterian Church in English and in Korean, just in case you know we forget people. You know what I'm saying? And so, do you know how ridiculous that would be if I was driving the church van and I got pulled over? Sir, you're going a little too fast in your church van. Right? In that situation, I think I'm a bold guy. I could never have enough guts to be like, hey, would you like to know about Jesus Christ? I can't say that, you know? The cop's going to laugh at me. You know, and that's kind of what Peter is going for. It's like, hey, you know, telling the world, telling your non-believing friends about God and what Christ is and who he is and what he has done is difficult enough. When you don't obey the law and you think that the law is a joke, it makes it a little bit more difficult, unnecessarily so. Okay? And so Peter is saying, hey, help yourself, help your testimony. It's very difficult for you to say, I love Jesus, do something stupid, get busted, go to jail. Guess what? You know what's going to happen? You're going to go to jail saying, I love Jesus, and no one's going to believe you. Because everyone's going to know it's an act. A lot of us, most of us, I think all of us, we're not aware we're too young Thank God. Okay, Johnny and I can count myself, and some can count myself in the young group this time. Okay, we were too young for the old in the 80s, where there were very famous TV pastor evangelists who got very famous. You know, they would show up on your TV screens every Sunday morning, and they would, you know, do their sermons and whatever, and they got very popular and they got very rich. Guess what happened? Busted. Sex scandal, drug scandal, busted. That's why you don't see much of them anymore on the TV. And some of them went to jail. Actually, a lot of them, most of them went to jail. Do you think in jail, when they went there, people respected their faith, respected their title? No. They might have rolled in there saying, yeah, my name is Pastor whatever. But to the inmates, that's just the name. You know what I mean? They lost their testimony. They lost the power of the testimony. It's that same idea. Right? And so, if we are, and we do this, and we listen to the law of the land, because we listen to the law of God. That's very simple. If we really say God is king, God is my king, Jesus is my king, we like to sing it, we like to say it, we like to study it. But if you really think about what that really means, and if that's really true, if Jesus really is your king, then you have to listen to the government. Because why? Because your king said so. Your king said so. Very simple. The sad thing is, in the American Christian culture today, especially in the news, we only see negative impact of that. You know? You know, we see, like, I remember, we saw Passion a couple weeks ago for Easter. When Passion came out, Mel Gibson just automatically overnight became, like, the celebrity Christian guy. Right, and the churches loved him. Everything Mel Gibson did, they're like, "Oh, he's awesome! Ah, he's my hero!" Right, like this is like before Tim Tebow. Okay, Mel Gibson was like pre-Tebow. Okay, it's like, "Yes, he's my hero!" And then he got busted for like all these same things, and you know, all these like pulled over for drinking and driving and stuff like that. You know, and when that happened, guess what? All over the news, Mel Gibson made the Passion. Says he loved Jesus, but he got pulled over while drunk. He says he loved Jesus, but he did this. He did that. He did this. He did that. So we see all these negative evidences of that, but we rarely ever see the positive evidence. And I'll end with this one story. The first century church, when I say first century, I mean like the first 200-300 years of the church as it was getting started. You have to remember, in the history of the church, when the church first started, it was illegal. In the Roman Empire, until Constantine made it legal, to be a Christian was illegal. Okay, you could, like, literally police can come up to your house and throw you in jail for being a Christian. Okay, a lot of people ended up in the Christian church because the church, the Romans were accusing the Christian church of not being a little weird and not listening to the law and stuff like that. But what the Christians did was, one story was that they actually did listen to the law very well, actually, think about it. And back in the day, if a plague or a big disease comes to your town and a bunch of people start dying, what you got to do is you board up your house and you leave town. And you go away, take a vacation or something until it goes away, and then you come back. And there was no health care back in the day, you know? And so there are stories about these Roman towns that got just demolished by disease. But the church started growing, and the reason was because while the pagan Romans left, not because, you know, of anything, but because they're like, oh man, this is happening, I gotta go. The Christians stayed and took care of the sick people. A lot of Christians actually died because of it. Right? Above and beyond the even the law, right? Because the Roman law said, hey, it's illegal for you to be a Christian. Okay. But they're still, you know, submitting to Jesus. And the law said, hey, if Elliot's living next to Sylvia and Sylvia gets sick, Elliot is under no obligation from the law to take care of Sylvia. Sylvia gets sick, Zoe's like, peace, good luck, she's gone. Right? But Elliot not only obeyed the law in terms of, you know, he didn't really do harm to Sylvia, but he went above and beyond the law and took care of her. Even if Elliot dies, don't give me that face, okay? Elliot died because he gave me that face, okay? But Sylvia lived. Right? And that's the church, guys. If we say we're the church, we submit to King Jesus, right? We listen to the government. And if anything, right, if there's anything to take away from today, is not only should we obey the law, but I think we should obey, go above and beyond. Right? Because the law says don't steal. But you know what Jesus says? Jesus says be generous. Right? The law of America says don't kill. You know what Jesus says? Jesus says go and love your enemies. Why? Because he did it first. He did it to us. That's the cool thing about God. God never says just go do it. He says go do this. Let me show you first. All right? Let's pray.